Good day and welcome to another special episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe, and it's my delight to welcome you on behalf of my co-host Emeka Onyagwa. In today's episode, we're going to look at the official start of political campaigns in Nigeria toward the 2023 general elections. As you all know, Nigeria is on the cusp of electing a government and a president to succeed President Muhammadu Buhari's administration. That administration has overseen the absolute bringing of a country to the edge of disaster. So the question is, what are the prospects for a successful election in 2023? And what are indeed the prospects for the continued existence of Nigeria as a corporate unit beyond 2023? I welcome you to today's episode. I sort of to begin to unpack this. The previous week, so this is the week that the campaigns begin officially in Nigeria. But you and I were monitoring political developments over the last week. And rather interesting trends, the fact that you look at the PDP, the People's Democratic Party, that the party is still very much embroiled in internal fissures occasioned by the continued insurgency by the current River State Governor Nyesom Wike, who has been sort of serving notice of his willingness to play spoiler against the party's presidential candidate, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, unless his conditions were met. And one of those conditions is that he wants the current national chairman of the PDP to step down. And of course, he's not happy with the way that the primaries were conducted, how he was outwitted by Atiku in what was essentially a game of bribery of delegates. We look at the candidate of the ruling party, the All Progressives Congress, former Governor Ahmed Bola Tinubu. And again, this past week, the party constituted a rather huge body to oversee the party's campaigns for the presidency. Conspicuously missing from that lineup is current Vice President Osibanjo. The party has explained that this decision to exclude the Vice President was at the behest of the President, Muhammadu Buhari, who wants the Vice President to continue, quote unquote, to run the government during this transitional period. I find that odd. It's particularly odd because Buhari in the past had been reluctant to cede executive powers to the vice president, even when Buhari was out of the country for medical reasons. So it raises a question of whether the APC, again, is going into the next elections with any sense of cohesion and unity. And we're going to talk in a moment about all kinds of challenges for Tinubu as well, but personal, as well as the factor of incumbency when the incumbent president has been particularly disastrous as a leader. And then there is the perhaps most fascinating candidate in the forthcoming elections, former Governor Peter Obi of Anambra State. Obi has acquired a kind of cult-like following by young Nigerians, those who are derisively called the social media generation. Obi, as you know, was recently in the United States, made a tour of several cities, and at each turn was received enthusiastically by people who raised a ton of money to support him, or at least pledged a ton of money to support him. So we're going to look at questions of whether Obi can sustain that momentum, whether he can withstand the onslaught of attacks, an onslaught of scrutiny about his own record, which he has often touted. And so there's a lot, you know, to look forward to in the coming weeks and months. So I don't know what your initial thoughts are.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the landscape, essentially, I think most interesting thing, whether publicly or more than in terms of what's happening now, it might not even be really, it might really be okay because of the
way. I didn't hear you. I think.
I said, looking at the landscape now, right, the most important thing might not actually be Obi. Might actually be Wike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of the way Nigerian elections, vis-a-vis African elections generally play out anyway, it's not always a free and fair edition of anything. Mm-hmm. It very rarely is, even at best. Even at best, when they're counting the votes, there are always ways to, like, stand. You know, if you look at it globally, it's not just America where we are. Elections are in some ways manipulated, not rigged, not mm-hmm. like what Trump claims, but they are, especially the primaries. You can, you know, mm-hmm. and in house seats, you gerrymander in primaries. You know, you can do things. So, if you look at places like in countries like Africa, and in this case Nigeria, people just sit down and go as far as not even caring and just writing results and moving on. So, what's going to happen is that that's not always the case, that people just outrightly write the election results and move on. That is the powers that be. It's not always the case that it happens that way. It does happen quite mm-hmm. often, but not mm-hmm. all the time. So let's assume we don't know. Let's assume, okay, you know, it's a good chance this time around would be like the other times that votes were counted. Then a week here wouldn't be that big of a deal, whether he likes it or not. I know he likes to delude himself, but I don't believe in a free and fair elections. Wike would win River States. I think people are suffering too much, and the man seems to think he's a political comedian of some sort, mm-hmm. and he really isn't that funny. But you know, he's what's the word I'd use for him? He's clownish. He's clownish. He's very clownish as a person. You know, so, but in terms of like winning an election, like, oh, he came out and gave a manifesto or gave speeches. Even if you compare him to the previous two, governors of the states who, are criminally inclined, but they were a lot more polished as individuals, and you could see them. That is, they were a better representation of River States than Wike could ever hope to be. And I know it doesn't account for much, but that's this thing. But yeah, that's the biggest story in terms of one. If Wike is that big a deal at the elections, is it going to be real elections to start with? And in some cases, is it possible that they can actually have elections in some parts of the country? Because I would put anything I have that in some parts of the country, there's just no chance at this point.
I mean, in some parts of the country, you can't even have elections. You and I, a couple of weeks ago, did examine the just absolute banditry in Zamfara State, in parts of Katsina State, in Yobe, Adamawa, Boronu. So these are areas where terrorist groups really have near absolute sway. And so there is no question that in lots and lots of territories in Nigeria, elections are not going to be feasible at all. And it's this explains, this is sort of part of why I have, and in a sense you also have, called for a different arrangement where different sectors of Nigeria would come together to choose the best in their areas to begin to reimagine and reformulate Nigeria and to establish whether we have the will, the volition to continue to stay as a country. And if we do, to begin from the ground up, to build a semblance of civic society, which we don't have. Almost every important structure of the state in Nigeria is in disarray, whether it's the police or the customs or medical care or the educational sector or the bureaucracy. You know, things are really broken down beyond repair and need rudimentary a building up from rudimentary stages before we can talk about, in my view, holding elections. So there's clearly the prospect that in many parts of the country there cannot be elections because the Nigerian state has not established a presence and control in so many parts of the country. But also to get to the point, I think you had a point.
One thing is the Nigerian state too, but you know, the security situation, it's just not there. And then, you know, we talk about what's going to happen. Would the country have come to a point where it's like, look, let's not have elections, like all these guys see out their terms, let's have a this thing, those kind of things, are they historically peaceful? Is it going to be peaceful? Very unlikely that that would be the case. Possible, but very unlikely. I wouldn't hold my breath and be like, you know, people are just going to come to their senses, especially in Nigeria in this era. Maybe in 80 years, when we look back at this era, people, our descendants would be
if they're still in Nigeria, right?
They'll be amazed that, oh, did this really happen then? Oh, wow, this must be a different, you know, it would seem like a completely alien this thing. But in this era, people are not going to sit down and be like, yeah, this is not working. Let's sit down, let's formulate, let's talk about what we might want to do. Stay together or not stay together. And if we're staying together, what's the structure? How do we build a country that is ours, not what the British constructed and then left it for what essentially are neo-colonial leaders? Well, neo-colonialists, essentially, you know. So you'd have that distinct. But in terms of the race, yeah, you have Justin of Wike, which lends the credence to a lot of things that we've seen happening of late in terms of the electoral commission called INEC, how they've been removing people, how they've been moving towards not counting the votes electronically, the actions they've been taking, tells you how important Wike is. They've all gone to London, and which I'll tell you, ask yourself the question, why is it always when you have very critical junctures, all the, all, not, none except, no exceptions, why does it end up in London?
In London.
And I'm going, why don't you go to any, pick some other destination where, why is it always there? And that's right from 1940s when they started talking about more rule for what the indigenes or whatever they would term them. So that to me, that's why I feel that's the biggest story. But in terms of this thing, we've seen Atiku being more silent and being represented more by his attack dogs. Tinubu trying to put up a face of a strong person, but in essence, he just he has a network of both big time PR agencies and very Tinubu and APC and most of these guys are very adept at looking for what we might call in this era influencers. Looking for influencers in every sphere. Like I used to be on Clubhouse, I would see a whole bunch of people who I would put anything I have, even including my own personal life, that they were getting paid monthly by the campaign, the way they were going about their business. A lot of them, and a lot of them don't even live in Nigeria. A lot of them live this thing. So they have their tentacles. They understand public perception. They understand breaking up clusters. It's kind of like in America, we're talking of Amazon or people. Yeah, there's a renewed emphasis on unions in America today. Thankfully, in my opinion, I don't know, you know, why. Well, I know why it was a misconception. But the big corporations have also renewed this thing in getting the union busting lawyers. And they go into places and decluster anything, even to the point that Amazon bans the word union in their building, bans clustering even inside the restrooms of any sort. So that's similar to that. That's akin, if you can look at it, if you can see that analogy to the way Tinubu campaign and even to some degree the Atiku campaign operates. They are looking for every area where there might be a cluster of negative distinct. They don't control the state, so they can't use state force, especially with Atiku. But with Tinubu, even though he's from the ruling party, he doesn't control the state. But they understand the thoughts and the distinct of opinions. And this, especially in this day and age, so they have their people. And if you cluster and you're like, they have their people, they will come in there, they are Stout's defenders, and again, a lot of them don't even live in Nigeria. And call names, but it's no point in just giving them the free advert.
Well, you know, they, I think that would benefit from maybe taking each candidate in turn and looking at the candidate's prospects as well as, sort of the negatives. So if we start with former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, clearly he's been hampered by Wike's insurgency, Wike's refusal so far to enlist and to embrace Atiku's ticket. I think has been a big handicap for Atiku. So Atiku has expended quite a bit of energy trying to either woo Wike to his side or to neutralize him. I think that Wike has proved particularly impossible to tame. Okay. Now, unlike what you said earlier, I actually think that Wike has great potential for causing, for being a cog in the wheel for Atiku, and perhaps for helping any other presidential candidate that he puts his mind to. First of all, as a state governor in Nigeria, state governors have great control over the electoral affairs of their state. You know, they control usually the local government chairmen and their councillors, at least most of them. They know the political actors at a very local level. they have a sense of all the technologies of rigging that are possible within their state. And in the case of Wike, I think that the other reason that Atiku has been particularly persistent in trying to broker peace with Wike is the fact that Wike has, as an oil producing governor, has a chunk of change, you know, to invest in the elections. I don't know. Atiku is a massively wealthy man, but the kind of campaign that we're coming into with Tinubu, who is also massively wealthy and has Lagos State resources to count on, and Lagos State is very, very wealthy. With Peter Obi, who is counting on the energy of the youth and on people, especially in the diaspora, willing to invest in his campaign. So I think that Atiku cannot afford to alienate Wike and the money, as well as the political energy that Wike is able to generate and contribute to Atiku's campaign if he wants to, or then to deduct from that campaign if he's not sold on joining that campaign in a very passionate way. Now, Atiku, what goes for him is that Atiku is the one politician, I think, who has the sort of the most, the deepest track in terms of allegiances or in terms of connections with quote-unquote the professional politicians in the Nigerian space, right? So Atiku has political associates, people who are his friends, who have liked him over the years, either because he's dispensed one political favor or one economic favor or another in the past to these people. So ex-governors, current governors who have been in his orbit, you know. But the negatives for him, I think, are quite considerable. The fact that Atiku is associated with the massive corruption that took place during Obasanjo's administration. And of course, Obasanjo is implicated. Obasanjo likes to point to Atiku as the exemplar of corruption. And we all know that Obasanjo participated in this corruption, that Obasanjo enabled corruption and shielded corrupt elements during his presidency. But that reputation for being deeply corrupt is something that Atiku must deal with. And it's going to be a tough uphill task for him at a time when Nigeria is, for all practical purposes, bankrupt. So somebody who is associated with just enriching himself at the expense of the country is not going to sell well, especially to young people who form potentially the broadest demographic for the election, and who are simply tired because they've come to a place of being crushed under the current economic circumstances of the country. And as you and I have been talking about, the Ukraine war and the pandemic have occasioned even deeper socioeconomic crisis in Nigeria, as well as the throughout Africa, and what's called, with all kinds of unease, the third world. So that for me is my take on Atiku, that whilst he can call on so many political figures in Nigeria, that this is the year where those sort of politicians are going to be seen, perceived as a liability rather than as assets, and that he has personal, and of course the other thing is he going to be able to come up with a vision for reversing the country's economic slide, for ending the country's pervasive violence and terrorism and insecurity? And is he even going to be taken seriously if he talks about controlling corruption? So yeah. I don't know what your take on Atiku Abubakar is before we get to Tinubu.
Yeah, I think Atiku's case is simple. He's appealing to what is the northern sentiment, what we can term the northern sentiment. Now, you're not Nigerian, if you're Nigerian, and you probably don't understand, which is most people, probably 90%. The coining of the northern sentiment started prior to independence, right? Prior to all the civil unrest, all the distance in the late 1940s. And it was essentially supposedly, which is very funny, supposedly coined by the Ahmadu Bellos of the world, who was a very tribalistic. In my own view, I always, if you have it, I always say tribalism and racism are pretty much the same thing, or sister and brother, siblings. But the same thing, in my opinion. It's very tribal, and it's not my opinion. If you go there, famous videos of Ahmadu Bello, the Saldana, and this thing is there. But they believed in talking about the North as one entity, which is the most bizarre thing. We talked about documentary Bandits of Zamfara a couple of weeks ago. And that's just the beginning. The amount of ethnic groups there who have been at war with the Fulanis, who survived the Fulanis in some cases, like I think the Zungurus, Kebbi, and a whole bunch of definitely the Kanuris in Boronu and other places, and who ended up being subjugated by the British. In fact, Kanuris really by the French, and then handed over to the British in the back and forth with the French over territorial integrity, which part of which included vanquishing the armies in Dahomey, as they should have, because those armies were very terrible on their own rights, by the way. But, you end up with all these groups within one entity, and then you call them this thing, and then you can't keep them together because people don't understand how much they don't want to be together. But the key selling point, which has always been there, which is round and round, I'm talking about what I wanted to get to, is the reality that one of the things you use to keep people together, people that really would rather kill themselves than look themselves in the eye, is to tell them what is over defense is a lot worse. And in effect, what is over defense is the Southerners. And the Southerners are classified from in the Arawa dictionary, even though back in the day there was a lot of issues when the Action Group and Co. came into Benue, and then they formed the United Middle Belt Congress, Joseph Taka and all those guys, who were ironically the first ones to try and actually break out of Nigeria. Funny keynote. Them and Isaac Adaboro as well. They were amongst the first ones to want to break out of Nigeria. Isaac Adaboro held Adaka Boro held the 13-day siege before he got crushed by Ojukwu, which is why some of those so-called ethnic minorities, some, the other ones that have other, don't like Igbo people. But the whole thing is keeping them together until that what's over defense. Now, what does that have to do with our current political? It's obviously, for first as first, is a continuation of, because we are in an unbroken, in my opinion, quagmire for over 100 years. But the next thing is Atiku is trying to appeal to that typical, easy, at this point in time, ready-made, ready-meal sentiments. You know, just put in 2 minutes in the oven, bring it out. What's over defense is worse. I'm one of you guys from the northeast of the country, where technically they settled, even though they ended up getting their emirate created first by the British and then subsequent governments. So in Adamawa, because they are not necessarily indigenous to that place, Adamawa, Taraba, and all those places. But he's Fulani. He has a lot of those things. He's in good with the crowd in Kano. He's technically in good with the elite in Kaduna as well. So that's something he's going to play to. What he has against him is a lot of things you spoke of from the beginning in terms of his corruption, his perception with the common man in the north. Common man in the north sees him as a thief, as a corrupt person, as every kind of thing you could think of. So that's who he is in terms of the balance he has to this thing from one side to the next side. Is he, to me, based on the kind of dynamics we run in Nigeria, based on the way we've been educated, or the lack of education, and the way we've been fed certain narratives and stereotypes, to me, is he the front runner? Yes, because of the ridiculousness of the situation we are in, not for any other thing. He is the one that maybe has the best chance to claim the Northern, not maybe, at least ahead of Tinubu, in my opinion, even though we'll come to Tinubu, he has the best chance of absolutely saying, I'm one of you, even though the other two are making their case, which would come to as well. It's a campaign. The question again is, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Is it going to be an election that there is some freedom to vote, which is another conversation we're going to come to, which is essentially the thread of this conversation. Is it one where because if people are going to vote, a lot of this structural power, so-called, unquote, so structural power, is all irrelevant. It's not going to be relevant, especially for the presidential elections, because people are at that point. It doesn't matter how much you want your team. And when I say your team, it's almost certainly your ethnic group to win. People are at that point where they're dying. Jackba is now a trending term in Nigeria. Jackba means relocate. All kinds of people everywhere. Everybody wants to run to anywhere. People are even running to Benin Republic, Sef, next door. Nobody wants to be involved in this economic quagmire that is in Nigeria. So that's my thing.
Yeah, you know, so, and I think that as the consequences of the Ukraine war, which at some point we're going to get into, done on the world, is going to bring massive hunger and is going to bring a huge downturn in the global economy. There are fears that the world is on the cusp of a global recession. Already you see signs of this in the instability, massive instability and disruptions in the U.S. stock market and stock markets elsewhere in the world. So what happens in those markets are going to ultimately have great, unfortunately, very dramatically negative effects on spaces like Nigeria. So, and all of this is going to play into the elections, if the elections hold, because at this point, I'm not even confident at all that we're going to have a country where elections can hold in 2023. But I hope I'm wrong. But as you rightly said, you know, there is a certain appeal that an article must make, which is, you know, you are man, you're better off having me than having somebody else from the southern part of the country. And I think that is the logic that ultimately got Buhari elected. And seeing how much of a disaster Buhari has been for Nigeria generally, but especially even for the northern part of the country, which has seen the worst of terrorist attacks and the worst of economic devastation. I think that there's a kind of ripeness for people to begin to reject that kind of logic, that kind of appeal to ethnic solidarity, which in Buhari's case has not helped anybody much, much less in the northern part of the country.
Yeah.
But let's look at Tinubu. So Tinubu was a fairly successful governor of Lagos State. We have to give him that. And even better than his average performance, which in Nigeria, average performance is good in a country where governors are often just total failures. But Tinubu sort of in putting Fashola as his successor. Fashola impressed a lot of people by the tone that he brought to Lagos, by a certain boldness in some of the infrastructural work that he did in Lagos. But then Tinubu began, once he left office, turned himself into a profiteer from the state that he governed, you know, just basically allocating himself so many open spaces, lands, and building real estate, and then turning himself into a collector of internally generated revenue and keeping what people, a lot of people will consider particularly greedy percentage of his the takings that his company was able to get, controlling toll collection on toll gates in the state and so on. So Tinubu has made just obscene wealth from Lagos State since his days as governor, and subsequently when he sort of became a kingmaker. But so there are some people who sort of look at his governance with some fondness. There are some people who give him credit for putting in some fairly good choices as his successors. Tinubu, on the negative side, has, as I proposed a few weeks ago, construed himself as the new Awo. And yet he doesn't have Awo's intellectual depth. He doesn't have Awo's discipline, Awo's organizational skills, Awo's commitment to social progress through things like free education and free health care. And so an Awo he is not. And particularly because the Yoruba are a proud people, there is, now we know, a burgeoning opposition to Tinubu's Awoist pretensions by elite Yoruba groups, including political groups, that are beginning to question the fact that this man who has made himself such a central factor in Yoruba politics has very shady, or shall I say, shadowy bona fides. The fact that nobody knows Tinubu's real name, Tinubu's parents, where Tinubu went to school, where Tinubu was born, and so on and so forth, is beginning to give pause to some Yoruba elite. So the other issue is that Tinubu is clearly frail of health. It's going to be difficult, given Nigeria's history with Abacha, who was ailing and ultimately died in office, with Umaru Musa Yar'Adua, who spent much of his one term as president in hospitals abroad, and couldn't run a country, with Buhari, who spent a good portion of his first term in office, again, receiving treatment for some undisclosed ailment in hospitals abroad. So the whole question of a country like Nigeria, which has profound problems, being entrusted to the care, to the management of a selection of a number of men who are battling their own personal health issues and who are too feeble and too sick to, even if they meant it, even if they meant well, even if they had a vision for transforming Nigeria into a habitable space, they simply do not have the energy to effectuate this vision. And so the fact that there's this viral video of Tinubu, you know, where he had wet himself, apparently. A recent video of Tinubu meeting with an emir and just, you know, snoring off. Or the brazenness, the hubris with which Tinubu declared that it was his turn to run Nigeria. So it's almost as if Nigerians owe him this turn, are just sleeping through 4 years in office, or perhaps even eight. And I think that particularly young people are beginning to reject that idea of geriatric sick men, are presuming it to be their right and prerogative to preside over the affairs of the country. And the fact that there was this opulent and altogether appalling picture at the APC presidential primaries, where, you know, just dollars were being disbursed to delegates. And so Tinubu was seen buying up the ticket, just like Atiku also bought up the ticket with the PDP. And I think that ultimately, perhaps the most potentially powerful factor against Tinubu is the fact that Tinubu is associated with putting Buhari in office. And he himself has boasted that other people had tried, Buhari had tried with a bunch of Igbo enablers and could not make it, and that it took him to get him over the finish line and to secure the presidency for him. Buhari has been a particularly atrocious president, a very narrow-minded, very provincial and nepotistic president. And so, and Tinubu has said that he wants to continue to build from where Buhari stopped. Nigerians want to forget the Buhari years. So anybody who invokes Buhari in positive light, I don't think is going to be able to excite Nigerians, especially the youth who are desperate for a different kind of country. I don't know what your take is.
Yeah. I mean, it comes all back to, I mean, in his own case, I just have to start from, I mean, Emilokan, you know, it's my turn. My turn. You know, it's almost like, sadly, you know, when some people get to a certain age, they start acting like they are in diapers again. Not everybody, some people. In this case, it seems like he's acting like that. So I start from
acting like they're diapers.
Like he's in diapers. Like he's a toddler. He needs to. I have toddlers, so I'm like, this guy is acting like one of my toddlers, which is, you know, is interesting, you know. But it's a guy. People might say, well, he's had stress. Is this? He's lost his son. That's why he's aged. I could see all those arguments. And even if I agree, I lost a cousin. I had an uncle who lost one of his two children. I saw the man age overnight. Some people would be like, well, he's so and so age. You know, even if we don't debate, like, all right, cool, this is fine. That's even more reason why you shouldn't be there, really. If you're that, it's that you need to go take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. Pushback on is when people talk about he was a above average successful governor. I'd have to ask, like, in the context of Lagos State, in all that Lagos has been in the history of West Africa, I'm talking of since 1850, and then the history of Nigeria pre-amalgamation, so 1899, right? You know, all it's been, even though 1899 wasn't quite distant, but by the time the Royal Niger Company moves its headquarters, Lokoja, Calabar, down to Royal Niger, north and east, the protectorate, by the time they moved the offices to Lagos and everything, all is benefited, all it generates, how every office has to have. I mean, it's very similar dynamics with Miki, oil producing. Yes, you get 13%, but better than that.
Oh, 13, actually.
13%, right? But better than being an oil producing state. Not to veer off the conversation here, but better than being an oil, there was a period in time where they had the opportunity to hold the oil companies to ransom. This is before kidnappings became a thing, but even with that, so you have a lot of oil company assets and oil company employees in River State. And that directly generates more revenue, not just for them directly, but also they also pay the government, the River State government. So that's why they are by far the richest oil producing state. And at the same time, they are number two most indebted states, the states in Nigeria. So they make a lot of money and they spend a lot of money, and there's not much to quantify it. It's very similar to the situation we saw Lagos. And now, are you going to say, well, Tinubu had a situation where Obasanjo withheld local government funds because they decided, they realized, which, yeah, they were right, and they were being fair and they were being honest. Last minute, the military created a whole bunch of local governments and made sure the local governments and the states they created would serve more interest in the core northern areas, which is the next place I'll come back to. But hold that distinct for a second, to the core northern areas. And then they under this thing to the southern areas, even in the southwest where they give six states, they give them less local governments. In the southeast is one less states. In the south is in, well, you'll always say, you don't know how something can be south of south. It's only Nigeria. So in the south, it's a situation where it's very similar, structurally imbalanced. Tinubu had, they came in, they were unhappy, they created more local government development areas from 20 to 57, which wasn't even close to what they should have. If Kano had, I think, or still has, I think 55 or something like that. And he got their funds withheld. He did quite a bit with or without the distance. But the question I would always ask to people is, what's the metric for success? You have a guy who did, barely did anything to MAUP. He did some. Moved a little bit. Lagos. If you don't get Lagos moving, there'll be problems. But he did his bare minimum. You tell the story of a lot of these guys and their actions, you know. But to me, he did the bare minimum in Lagos. And he structured himself not just to be profiteering. I would even use the word profiteering. He structured himself to be the landlord of Lagos. He's the landlord that distributes to his network of thugs, street urchins, whatever you want to call them, and whoever, MC Musili, all these guys are all LASMA. This is what they now term. They now took thugs and gave them uniforms and gave them different names. And the main aim was to make sure they had money in their accounts during the non-election period. And then when election period comes, all these so-called thugs, NWTR, this thing, the National Union of Road Transport Workers, as their official name, or the LASMA people, will all be activated to achieve the ends of always carrying the state. That's why Obasanjo could never carry the state, because, like it or not, Tinubu doesn't just have his own private police in Lagos. He has his own private army, well-armed army. So Obasanjo couldn't rig the state, even though he tried to rig everywhere else. It's near impossible. And you see that legacy continuing on to today, which is another thing we'll get to in terms of this thing. In terms of Peter Obi, I have a relative who is functional in the advertising space, in the event management space and all that. And people were making fun of him over the weekend. One of the groups were making fun of him. And like, well, not kind of really making fun of him, but they were asking the question, why is it that we could see these Peter Obi rallies, which is what we'll get to later on, but in other states, in Abuja, it was massive. I don't know if you saw it. It's crazy. It was absolutely, you know, insane. It shows it was no anybody saying it's a joke at this point in time. You're living in the moon, you know, but you don't see it in Lagos. And it's like, in effect, anything Peter Obi advertising has been banned from Lagos. You can't even put up a billboard with Peter Obi in Lagos. It's like, wow. Mm-hmm. Is that not against the law? So you're free to pay for it and put it up there if you want.
It's going to go come down.
That's if you get down, if they don't catch you. If Tinubu's army doesn't catch you, there's a good chance you will make it out alive. And even if you do, you're going to make it out severely physically different than when you started out the journey. So these are the legacies of Tinubu. He did put some guys that were somewhat functional managers to some degree. Yes, he did. But how functional are they when a good part of the revenue of the state has to go to one man? Are you that functional, really? I think to some degree you could make an argument that you have to work with what you have. In the case of Fashola, in the case of an Ambode, who was the governor after Fashola, he tried to change the system and he became a one-term governor.
That's right.
In the case of Saolu is more or less Tinubu's PA. You see him at times carrying Tinubu's bag as governor, carrying Tinubu, you know, anywhere Tinubu is going, he's following out. Yes, sir. He's not trying to argue with Tinubu. So to me, that is a legacy. You'd have to measure what good governance is based on what you have. I don't believe in saying, hey, there's a Dubai, and what do you have? What can you work with? Most things in Nigeria for a state are under the federal list, meaning you can't do anything about them. Power is one of them. You can't do, if you generate power in Nigeria, you have to feed it to the federal government. And then the federal government will decide on what to do with the power, not you, the states. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of other issues like this. So what's the definition for success? I keep hearing this thing, and people are like, judging for what Lagos has been for the last 100 years, I fail to see how the majority, I could give it to Fashola based on it. You say, well, I don't want to fight to Tinubu. But even Tinubu and those after Fashola, I fail to see it. I was in Lagos a couple months ago. I saw some projects there, here and there. But comparatively, what Lagos could be doing, be building its own airports. It shouldn't be relying on Murtala, which it has kind of, but it can't even effectively migrate the airport to the other wing. It can't, but part of that is also the same federal list, but that's still more navigable. Most of the expenses for the airlines not being able to move to the new airport, a large part of that falls on the state and the so-called thugs that he has around there. And that's the same guy that now wants to become the rent collector for the country federally. There's no other way of seeing it than somebody that is going to end up replicating the state model into a federal model and become the landlord for the country. I don't think most people are after that. I think his whole aim is, again, back to the northern thing. His whole aim is this, obviously. We'll talk of one north. He has Buhari in his corner. He doesn't need everywhere in the north. He just needs certain places. The way Yorubas always have gone after it, the middle belt especially. And in what you term as the middle belt, in terms of the Benue, the Kwara, the Niger, and even in these cases, places like Taraba, which is largely Christian, and other places will be a target for Tinubu. If he figures to steal out these places, maintain home base by thuggery, absolute, because I mean, this is already clear what's happening in the Southwest, in Lagos and other Southwestern states. So that's his ideology to achieve his Emilokan. Emilokan is my turn, you know. So to me, he's just the my turn guy, man. The my turn dude. He feels there's a sense of entitlement with nothing else to offer.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, ultimately, as you said earlier, Tinubu has been savvy in sending influencers into certain spaces, but he can't afford to, especially given the history of Buhari and the history of all the other feeble, ailing misleaders of Nigeria. Nigerians are particularly, I suspect, sensitive to the idea of having another president who can't get up easily from bed in the morning and who needs to be fortified by medicine and steroids and so on, even to operate at a minimal level. And ultimately, whatever number of influencers and so on that you deploy into the political space to campaign for you, this is not an election where you are going to get much mileage if you are running it by proxy. If you are sending other people to speak for you. I think Nigerians are going to insist, they're not going to settle for having your vice presidential candidate, Shettima Kashimu, come and campaign for you. They're not going to settle for Nollywood actors or governors speak on your behalf. They're going to insist that you show up. And if you show up and you are shaky, if you show up and your voice does not carry, if you show up and you sleep during rallies, or it's seen that people are helping you to get around and so on, it's going to send a very strong message to Nigerians that this is not the direction they want to go in. Okay.
Yeah.
And let's come finally to Peter Obi. You and I know that Peter Obi and I have had battles, major battles in the past. I admired the tenacity with which he pursued the governorship, his governorship, which was originally stolen by the PDP through Ngige, who became the imposter governor for almost 3 years of Obi's, what should have been Obi's original tenure. I also admire the precedents that he set in the Supreme Court, which ruled that a governor's tenure began for the full term on the day that a governor was sworn in. So Peter Obi, even though he was rigged out and Ngige served 3 years approximately of his term, Obi was able to then spend 3 years in office, 4 years in office as his first term, and then won re-election. I was critical of Obi for what I saw as his inflexibility as governor. That at a time when governors in Anambra State were on strike, asking for what was incidentally a minimal...
doctors, right?
Doctors, yes.
Yeah.
What did I say?
I thought you said governors, but... You know,
okay, just, when doctors were on strike, yeah, it's possible that I said governors, yeah. excuse me. So, when doctors were on strike in Anambra State asking for some improvement in their financial package, the fact that Obi let that strike linger for so long, for me, was a discredit to his political instincts. And also to, you can't be the governor of a people who are poor, who have inadequate access to medical care and being different to the fact that government employed doctors are on strike, and therefore so many indigent people in your state will now be forced to go to private hospitals to pay money that they don't have in order to get health care. I mean, health care does not go into abeyance because doctors are on strike. People fall sick all the same. So I think, you know, I was very, very critical of him for doing that. I was critical of him again when he began to fraternize with somebody that I consider politically, who should be a political pariah, Chuman Zeribe. The fact that Obi at some point supported Chuman Zeribe's senatorial bid was something that I was very critical of. And, you know, he and his administration lied against me, claimed that I had insulted some political and clerical figures and some the Obi of Onitsha and so on, which never happened. And so I wrote one of my most fury columns, calling him and his spokesperson merchants of lies. And I don't withdraw at all. I'm not backing up from that criticism. It was deserved. And my hope is that Obi has learned from his mistakes, but clearly he made many mistakes as governor of Anambra State. Ultimately, Obi is celebrated by people because of the fact that he left. He practically took no loans when he was governor, and he left a substantial sum for his successor. He could have done more in terms of infrastructural development in Anambra State, by the way. Orca remained an eyesore at the end of his term as governor. But he did invest in education, and he did transform the schools in the state so that kids from secondary schools in Anambra State became basically the top students in Nigeria by so many different measurements. So Obi has a record that is impressive in several areas, that is sort of middling in some other areas, that is bad in other areas. But part of why he's connected with young people is the fact that Obi does something which too many Nigerian politicians don't do, which is that he offers some analysis, a sense that he understands the nature of the problems in Nigeria, and that he's thought about those problems, and that he is willing to articulate some solutions. Often, some of the figures that Obi reels out have been called to question, you know what I mean? But it's his style that when he speaks, he says, you know, this country has this GDP and it generates so much megawatts of power, and he earns so much from this sector, and so on and so forth. So when he does that, like pastors who quote passages from the Bible, and you know, sometimes when you check, you see that they've got it wrong, you know. So B has that, but still Nigerians are impressed. A lot of Nigerians are impressed that here is somebody who at least is thinking about issues of development, of infrastructure, of diversification of the economy, and so on and so forth. Even so, Obi is an imperfect carrier of this dream of young people. Okay? Young people, some of them have suggested that Obi is a saint, and I will insist and continue to say that Obi is absolutely no saint. He's far from one. But I think that if OB is going to do well, it will come from the young people if they get him elected. Almost breathing down his neck to make sure that he lives up to the commitment that he makes. That if you left it up to him, he will talk a great game, but not live up to the expectations. So that, and as you said, clearly, the energy, the passion, the momentum is on his side in this election. That the other two candidates must look with envy at the fact that they are spending money to buy love, to buy affection, to buy votes, to buy delegates. But here is Obi being flown all over the world by Nigerians who are throwing cash at him. Some people willing to donate substantial amounts to make sure that this guy wins. And I think that should he win, that unless he's an absolute fool, which I don't think he is, that ultimately he's going to recognize that if he fails everybody who has invested in him, invested their time, their money, their emotions in his candidacy, that his name will forever be associated with the most evil of epithets. So I think that if Obi wins, and he has a good shot at winning, if he develops a ground game, right? Because you can't win on the internet. You can't win on social media. You can't win by giving good speeches. You can't win by drawing large crowds. You have to win by having legs on the ground, people who are going to go to polling booths, who are going to go door-to-door campaigning for you, people who are going to make sure that the votes for you are protected and not stolen. If he does that and he wins, I think that he's going to face massive problems because, again, the country is bankrupt, right? And you have insecurity. How is he going to address that? That ultimately what might happen is, again, that Nigerians will continue to send money. Nigerians abroad will continue to sustain the economy of the country, that a lot of people will volunteer to go home, Nigerian expertise in different areas, to go and start rebuilding the country. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that, to conclude about my thoughts on Peter Obi, I think that if he wins, he's going to face massive challenges. The country is bankrupt, essentially. There is the insecurity that is intractable, that is widespread, it's pervasive, it's deep-rooted. And there is just general demoralization in the country. If Obi is going to succeed, he will benefit from the continued goodwill of Nigerians in the diaspora, who hopefully will make substantial investments, commitments to investing in the country. Some professionals hopefully will, you know, volunteer their time in Nigeria to serve in different capacities and to help to build the country from the ground up. And maybe if we're lucky, the international community, led hopefully by international agencies, by the United States, by Britain, hopefully, I emphasize, may want to maybe again forgive the thoughtless debts that we have accumulated in the Buhari years. But some of that debt is owed to China. So I don't know what China will decide to do.
Forgive what?
Forget it. China will ask for an arm and a leg. But hopefully there'll be some forgiveness, debt forgiveness. There'll be some infusion of developmental capital into the country to give Nigeria a shot at starting all over, and so on. So that's sort of my final thoughts on Obi as a candidate, who clearly, as I said, is generating the greatest excitement, even though, as I'm the first to tell you, he's an imperfect candidate.
Yeah. I mean, look, before I start, I'm going to just say this, man, because it's the truth, I guess, you know. Mental, social, intellectual development is something that is always ongoing. So the person you were 10 years ago, you're supposed to be a different person and hopefully a better person you are 10 years later. Same way 5 years later. Same way 15 years later. And if you're not doing a Milokana, you should be a better person than doing that. That being said, from all accounts, Obi, imperfect, yeah. We all are. So that's an understatement. Was he a great governor? Most people term him as an average governor. Why they even give him average is because of the fact that he left supposedly, because that's subject to some level of debate, but let's give it to him. He supposedly left left the state in good financial standing, with more money. And you can see the tradition in Igbo states. You go to Igbo states, they've consistently borrowed the least, which maybe probably lends to that stereotype that the Igbo man is not one to spend more than he can earn. At least the Igbo man. So you leave money? Yeah. And in fairness to himself, you're looking at most of his speeches, he talks about how he saved money, all that stuff. He talks about that. Even though, judging by what I have heard and what I have, you could verify, some of that is wildly overblown. By far, is he incorrupt? Was he incorrupt as governor? No, he was not. Is he a better candidate than anybody that ran this time around? Even Oshubanjo, in my opinion, I think so. I know people would say, but I could measure those metrics, but in terms of all the people that ran, or at least all the major guys that ran, let's not go to the minor people as well. I don't mean minor. No human being is technically minor, just as your candidacy. Obi was way better than, you could say, the top seven of the people that ran. Let's just limited to the top seven, right? And what has now endeared him to people is one of the stories he tells about, because people are tired of reading these figures, how Tinubu is the landlord of Lagos and how Atiku has become the landlord of some sectors in Nigeria, and all these guys now want to create their kingdoms and coronate their children for the rest of their lives because their kids don't even live there and all, So people are endeared to Obi for that. People are also endeared to Obi because the guy that didn't run for office before, he ran for governor. He wasn't even polling that great. It was even at the point in time, it was Tojuku that comes in and talks up his candidacy. Mm-hmm. Which you still see Bianca talking up his candidacy even till now. And what also endeared him to people is that in a very corrupt environment like Nigeria, after you've taken the resources of the people and the state and used it for your own personal use, and you serve for 8 years as a governor, you typically end up going to serve in the Senate or going to become a minister. That's the standard. That's the gold star, or putting your spouse. For those that will say, well, I didn't go, but my spouse, your spouse, and putting your spouse there, that's the standard. Tinubu has done it. Obi Ayanade is going out, is trying to do with his wife. Almost everybody has done that. Obi didn't do that. He left and went home. So, in a way, it also lends credence to that distance, even when you see his imperfectionalities. Man still have 8 years, whatever is imperfect. And trust me, I believe you've said so. All the columns you wrote about B, you stand by them. And there are quite a few. You go read them. They are true. There are quite a few. The reality is the day he left office, he didn't. He associated with criminally minded characters. But in the minds of, and I would say this fully, in the minds of a lot of people, associating with criminally minded characters is a different thing from running a criminally minded enterprise, which is what most politicians do, as I just described. Mm-hmm. And that endears into people as well. So he's had this thing, and you know, people feel, and his actions of not engaging in a money battle with these guys, even though he probably didn't engage in that money battle, maybe somewhat because of his stance. His stance really is, Obi is not somebody that is going to give people money, even when he has, for better or worse. Sometimes good, but sometimes actually terrible. Very terrible. So let's call it for what it is. Not saying Nigerians are desperate for anybody. At this point in time, I'm even of the opinion if the elections must hold, they should just put out an advert and hire somebody to run the country. Save everybody's investments. This has to be what.
Oh my gosh. I hope you're going to make yourself available to go do that job.
No, I'm busy right now. Give me maybe 4 years. You can call me.
But if they delay the elections for another couple of years, maybe you'll be available. Anyway,
they should put that. Yes. They should put that. George Bush will come around the country for them.
Trump is desperate for work. Maybe Obama. Obama, you know, we could make Obama an honorary citizen of Nigeria, and adopt him as president of Nigeria. He'll just tell Biden, all this money you are sending to Ukraine, send half of it to my way in Nigeria. We'll be in business anyway. Best. So it's been such just.
Yeah.
I'll
finish up and just say,
yes, please.
It's been exciting people in that regard, right?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of this thing. But at the end of the day, his parts to what they are thinking of at this, what they are probably thinking of, or what they should be thinking of at this point in time, is to maximize the amount of turnout they could have. Mm-hmm. Their structure should be the people. People are back in the campaign. People mm-hmm. are with him. People are going out with him and all that. So their structure should be the people. They could win,
mm-hmm.
definitely. Even in places you wouldn't expect, they could win.
Mm-hmm.
What happens next? I've always said it's a whole different. You've talked about foreign remittances and all this. It's a whole thing. I don't know what Obi would do, but I know it's a mess. And I don't wish that mess on any. I don't even wish that mess on him.
That in a sense, I'm actually, I'll be sorry for Nigerians if certain candidates win, because so far it seems that those candidates don't have a plan at all, except for politics as usual. His Excellency the President of Nigeria. Is there some money lying around which I can steal or put in the pockets of my associates? If a fairly good candidate wins with a plan, I'm sorry for that candidate, because there's no money to do all the great things that you promised Nigerians. That it's like Nigeria would have benefited from a superb candidate in 1991 when an interloper like Obasanjo usurped the position.
Yeah, they're saying in 1999.
No, 1999 is what I said. I hope. I hope I'm not. So we would have benefited from a more thoughtful, more visionary, more imaginative leader in 1999 when Nigeria had the resources still, or in the Jonathan years when again, or even when Buhari took over, because there was a streak when the oil sector was bringing in some money. Now the country is bankrupt. So we'll see. We'll see what, what happens.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what I don't like. When people tell me about it, I tell you, look, it's a big, big. But like you said, if he goes there, and this is where I want to, he goes there and he's the same guy that ran Anambra. Yeah, bro. You'll be a disaster. I'm telling you, I'm saying it now. You'll be an absolute disaster, man. I hope you've grown.
Yeah.
I hope you've grown.
Yeah,
it's going to be problematic.
You know, the challenges of Anambra are so, so infinitesimal compared to the challenges of Nigeria. And so, and yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Yeah. But the thing going for Obi is that if he opens himself up to for help, right, that there are Nigerians in every field of endeavor, okay, in science and technology, in finance, in governance, in high tech, in the pharmaceutical industry, there are lots of Nigerians who want a better country, who are going to lend their resources, lend their brain power, sort of come with this wave of enthusiasm to rebuild the country. It's not going to be Obi, but Obi is going to be perhaps the spark that draws all this energy to the country. Anyway, it's a conversation that we can just
continue to go on with,
but we will revisit this. As we said, this is the week. The politicians have been set. They've been on their marks. And so this week, finally, the referee says go. And so we're going to see how they run the race. And we will come back with you in episode after episode and analyze the developments. We thank you very, very much for joining us.
All right.
Brilliant.